Good morning. My guest this morning is Elizabeth Grossman. She's the author of High-Tech Trash, Digital Devices, Hidden Toxics, and Human Health. And that's not her first book. She's been on KVU before. She wrote a book about dams and dam removal. But today we're talking about the design, manufacture, and disposal of computers and cell phones and so on. Elizabeth, welcome to KVU.
Thanks for having me.
Well, what kind of objects have you covered in your book, High Tech Trash?
Well, I concentrate on computers because they're the most obvious and the largest and almost the most ubiquitous, but it really pertains to anything that has circuit boards and semiconductors, microchips in them, so it would include cell phones and DVD players and CD players and iPods and all that kind of thing, but mainly concentrate on computers.
Okay, and we're talking both about the CPU, the big piece that's under your desk, as well as the screens, and both types of screens, both the cathode ray tube, the ones that are like televisions, and now the more modern flat ones that use LED technology for you to see what you're typing or reading.
Yeah, that's all of them. And since that part of what I looked at is the waste end of things, when you think about what's now entering the waste stream, what's being thrown away, those are largely the older, clunky, big desktop monitors and the under-desk units. Laptops are quickly catching up, but not as many of those are being tossed out yet.
Okay, when I look at a computer, I see plastic on the outside, and I see glass, the window in front. But actually, there are a lot of pretty surprising materials. I think most people would be surprised. What can you find in a computer?
Well, there are lots and lots of different metals in computers. There are precious metals in computers. There are gold and silver and copper. There's tin. There's zinc. There are hazardous metals like mercury and beryllium and barium and chromium. And some of these are used in very tiny quantities. There's also quite a lot of lead in older computers, lead that was used as solder to connect parts, and also a lot of lead in the big cathode ray tube, both in the leaded glass and in some of the connecting bits in back.
How much lead? How many pounds?
Well, it depends. The big old desktop monitors could have anywhere from 4 to 6 or more pounds of lead in them altogether.
Wow, and it just takes... I believe I've heard that, you know, for a person, a child's brain to be damaged, it's, you know, a gram or something.
Yeah, I mean, current research shows that virtually no level of exposure to lead is safe for children. But one thing that's actually important to remember with high-tech electronics is while the equipment is intact and being used properly, if it's not cracked or broken or left to fry out in the sun, for the most part, none of the toxic materials can harm you or can get out. It's when they are taken apart or they're broken or damaged, that's when the toxics emerge. So having a child sit near a computer screen, the lead is not going to harm them. So that's kind of important to remember.
Of course. I did want to ask, gold?
Yes, gold. I mean, I was really surprised when I first learned there was gold in computers, and there's less gold in newer computers, but older computers used gold as for conductors, because gold is a very good conductor of electricity, and it also doesn't corrode very easily. So there are little tiny gold filaments that are used to conduct electricity in different places in circuit boards. And there's actually enough gold in circuit boards that the U.S. Geological Survey, the USGS, part of the U.S. government, has determined that a ton of circuit boards is a much more useful source of ore than would be a ton of raw ore.
Wow. Well, considering the many millions of computers, are we using more gold for computers now than for jewelry? Or
no, absolutely not. The amount of gold that goes into electronics is a small fraction compared to what goes into jewelry. But one of the important things to think about gold, but also copper and some other metals, is that they are virtually 100% recyclable. So it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to throw this stuff away, because it can be recovered and it can be used again, and it's far less environmentally damaging to recover the gold from used electronics and put it into use again than it would be to start from scratch and mine that ore. And as you know, gold mining has lots of environmental impacts that are really undesirable.
couple more materials I want to ask about before going on. Mercury, I think those of us, at least of a certain age, know that mercury is bad for you. It's in tuna, in the fat in tuna, so we have to watch out for that. Mercury is now being used in the more modern flat screens. Is that right?
Yeah, it's used in the little tiny lamps that light up the flat screen display units, whether they're on TVs or computers, and I think there are even little tiny ones in cell phones. And it's a tiny amount of mercury, and ideally that mercury should be removed before a computer goes through a recycling process. But if a computer is just simply put in a landfill, that mercury is going to be there. But it is a tiny amount, but it's very hazardous material, so you don't want it in landfills.
Okay, and last question about materials. Lead, once again, there's the glass in the front of the screen. The glass is leaded.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
To protect against any possible radiation from the little bombardments of the things that make the screen light up. I'm not a chemical engineer, so I won't be able to explain that to you, but the glass is leaded. It also has barium and chromium and phosphorus, and that is to both make it work as a screen and to protect from any radiation.
Okay. Okay, while you're sitting at your computer, I guess other than radiation, these metals and other materials won't hurt you. But again, in the mining and for workers in manufacturing, and then when we throw these away, you can be harmed. Just a little bit, let's not get too medical, what harm can be done to humans by some of these heavy metals and other things?
Well, do you want me to tell you about the impacts of heavy metals?
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, metals like mercury and lead and chromium, barium, all can have they can damage the nervous system. They can get into the bloodstream, eventually could cause some kind of brain damage. And again, I mean, I kind of want to emphasize that this stuff is not going to leap out of you at your computers, but these are really hazardous things that you don't want in landfills. And one of the real problems is that a huge amount of electronic waste, used computers and cell phones and all that kind of equipment, don't get put in really well-run landfills in this country. A huge amount of these old computers and things get sent overseas to places like China and India and Africa, where they eventually get tossed into uncontained landfills that are regularly burnt to reduce the volume in the landfills. They're in low water table areas, low-lying areas where the water is just kind of sitting there. They're on riverbanks. And so all of these heavy metals are leaching into water systems, along with all the chemicals from the plastics, a lot of volatile organic compounds, dioxins from plastics, things that make plastics colorful and bend and flame resistant. All of these things are getting into local water supplies and also sort of percolating up into the atmosphere. So some of these chemicals have been found miles and continents away from where they were disposed of.
So can we say that besides humans who might be downstream or downwind or whatever, plants and animals and our drinking water can be affected?
It could be, yes. And, I mean, in some places in China where huge amounts of e-waste have been dumped, the whole water system has been poisoned and people have not been able to drink their water for many years. This happened in a community in southern China called Guiyu. People haven't been able to drink their water there for years. I think some research has been done on plants, but a lot of research has actually been done on animals, and chemicals, particularly from the plastics in disposed of computers, have been found in marine mammals all over the world, in fish, and those chemicals then work their way up the food web, and they've been found in almost all food that contains fat at this point.
Yeah, I think listeners to KBOO are probably aware that a lot of dumps, that's the word I learned when I grew up in the Northeast, landfills, whatever, are not, even in this country, are not well lined at the bottom, and there is leakage. And I found it interesting in your book, you say that 200 to 300 different materials are used, go into a computer. We can't keep track of all that stuff once we bury it.
you can't keep track of when you bury it, and it's also really hard to keep track of exactly what's going into this equipment in the first place, because the sort of recipes, if that's what you want to call it, for the chemicals that are used in particularly the chip manufacturer and circuit board manufacturer, they're proprietary to the companies that make them. And it's not hard to figure out or find out what various categories of chemicals are used, but exactly how much. And there are always new chemicals being invented. And one of the problems that we have in this country with this kind of chemical manufacturer is that these chemicals get used in commercial and consumer products before their health impacts are thoroughly tested. And there's so many new chemicals being introduced that the industry can't even keep up with what's going into it.
Yeah, you found in your research that just getting a handle on the size of this issue was very hard. Governments don't keep statistics. Manufacturers won't reveal statistics. And then there's also, I guess you might call it, shady trading of materials between the mine and the factory.
There are three major steps of this. There's the manufacturing part, where you won't get a company like Intel or AMD or any other chip maker to tell you exactly what is going into their products, because it's very competitive. You can get a general list of things, and all companies actually are now pretty good about reporting large uses of water and certain chemicals that they have to report. But it's hard to keep track of exactly what goes into the products. And then on the waste end of things, this is a really new category of waste. Electronic waste we've been creating computers and getting rid of computers for 20 to 30 years now, but it's really only in the past 5 to 10 years that everybody's woken up to this issue and said, oh my gosh, we have a huge amount of stuff out there. I mean, in this country, we get rid of somewhere around 250 million computers a year, if not more, and nobody's been counting these as a separate category of waste, so it's really hard to keep track of how much stuff we're getting rid of and where it's going. And on the supply end of things, because this is a really a globalized business and materials come from all over the world and they get manufactured all over the world, it also is hard to keep track of where everything is coming and going. And although individual companies will document all of that, at a certain point there's some material streams that you just can't track. It's really hard to keep track of.
It's hard. This book covers a lot of different issues, and I believe it's the first book to cover electronic waste, full-length version. I've read a few articles. Maybe the listeners have, too. But it's sort of, I don't know where to go next, but I'll think of something. No. In making chips, I also read in your book that there are 200 or more steps just in making computer chips. This is a very precise product, and you've got to do a lot of things. And when I talked about 200 or more materials, there's also 200 or more steps. Some of the materials don't actually become part of the computer. They're used as agents to cause a chemical reaction or something.
Mm-hmm.
But water especially, how much water is used to create a computer chip or a pound of them or something? Can you get a handle on that?
Well, I don't have a number on, right, absolutely on top of my head for water, because it's been changing. And I mean, research that was done at the United Nations University a few years ago looked at how much material went into 1 2-gram microchip. And they found out that it took 630 times the amount of material, sort of the amount of material that went into that chip was 630 times bigger than the final product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the order of magnitude that you're looking with. It's hundreds of times more physical material is used to produce the final product. And since this research was done, chips have gotten even smaller. And the amounts of water that are used are huge. They're 8-9 times the amount of what you would see in final weight of a product.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to keep track of this because it keeps on changing. And even though the processes have gotten more efficient and they're becoming less wasteful of resources. There are more and more chips being made all the time, and one figure I read was that as of next year, 2007, there would be 1 billion computers on the planet, which is one PC about for every 6 people on Earth. And that's kind of a rate of increase in the past couple of years. Of the computer sales are growing about 10 times faster than the world's population is. And the amount of chips kind of even dwarfs that. There are sort of dozens and dozens of chips that are made for each one of these things. So the amount of equipment being made keeps going up, so that overall volumes of materials, even though they're more efficient per unit, continues to grow as well.
You're listening to the Tuesday Radio Zine on KBOO in Portland, and our guest is Elizabeth Grossman, author of High Tech Trash. Elizabeth, you're talking about the whole world. Let's bring this right home to Portland. There's a company in town called Siltronic, formerly known as Wacker Siltronic. They're on Northwest Front Avenue, and they make chips or material for chips. They don't assemble computers. Now, they have a permit from the state Department of Environmental Quality that allows them to dump some toxics in the Willamette River out of their factory. And they're dumping over 1 million pounds of toxic solids a year into the Willamette River. How does a company get a permit to exceed what's the limit for you and me?
Well, you'd have to go back and look at how the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, sort of came up with that regulations. But I can't really answer why they're allowed to do that, mm-hmm. but they are allowed to do it. Companies that use over a certain volume of chemicals have to report it. And one of the interesting things about Siltronic was a few years ago, they were the largest direct discharger of toxic material to the Willamette River. Since then, since about 1998, 1999, they have gradually been reducing the amount of toxics. And they make, I don't know if listeners know, but they make silicon wafers. Mm-hmm. They polish the flat cylinder slices that then get chopped up into little tiny bits and have all of the chemicals added to them so they will run a computer or a cell phone. And there's a lot of polishing and washing and a lot of solvents and things like that that get used that eventually get flushed into the river. And one of the things that they've been able to figure out in the past few years is a way to take some of that byproduct and put it into other industrial processes. So actually in the past 5 years, the amount of waste that they're putting into the river has gone down dramatically. They're still putting hundreds of thousands of gallons of pounds of toxics into the river, but it has been reduced dramatically.
Okay. That's Portland, Oregon, and we've already mentioned that in third world countries, things are worse. We mentioned Guiyu, China. You talk about in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where some useful ores come from. Ores for metals that are used in computers. There's actually been fighting. This is a part of the country that is not, shall I say, strictly controlled from the capital. And there's been fighting over the ores and the profits from the ores.
Yeah, the ore that you're talking about is something called coltan. And it's actually a combination of two different metal ores, columbium and tantalum. And it's used as what's called a capacitor, and that's a sort of a little electric charge connector, which is about as technical as I can get about it.
We actually have capacitors in radio.
There you go. And this ore, it's mined in Australia, it's mined in Canada, it exists all over the world, but there are large deposits in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and because of the horrific political situation there, the horrible civil war that's gone on, there's been a huge amount of really shady dealing. Around 2000, 2001, 2002, the price of this coltan ore was skyrocketing, very lucrative, and a lot of shady dealings as to who was selling what to whom and where it was going. And the UN actually convened a special commission to look into the provenance of the metal coming from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And in response to that, virtually every manufacturer of capacitors issued a declaration to say that their tantalum was not from the Congo. But unless there is some really hard and fast way to track every step of the way where this metal comes from, something that the diamond industry has done after all of the attention paid to diamonds that were being come from badly run and badly run mines in areas that were really taking advantage of people, unless you have some real solid documentation, it's very, very hard to know, because these things get transshipped across borders, and it's almost impossible to track this stuff really in a really hard and fast way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We can do better. I mean, society at large can do better. What about design? I mean, do we have to use these particular metals that are harmful for our bodies, or that people fight over the profits because they're so rare? Can we use other ingredients in making computers?
Well, actually, quite a lot is being done in that area, and it's all called sort of design for the environment. And one of the things that's happened in the past couple of years is that legislation was passed in Europe. One has to do with recycling of electronics. The other piece of legislation has to do with some of the hazardous materials in electronics. And that legislation required, as of last year, 2005, that certain uses of lead, mercury, cadmium, chromium, and some flame retardants be reduced and eliminated. And now this doesn't remove all of this, but for instance, with lead, this means no more lead solder. And virtually all computer and electronic manufacturers are meeting these requirements and taking these materials out of that. At the same time, because computers have been so difficult to take apart, something you need to do if you're going to recycle them and extract the reusable materials, a lot of changes in design are gradually being made so that makes them easier to recycle. At the same time, there's a lot more that could be done so that it isn't such a mystery what to do with this equipment. But, yeah, changes in this kind of designs are being made all the time.
Well, the European Union has these two new sets of laws in effect. Will that affect American computer makers?
Yeah, the materials legislation will affect and is affecting all of the American computer manufacturers, because this is a global business. It's simply not efficient from a sort of efficiency standpoint or an economic standpoint to make a computer that, say, you could sell in Boston or Mexico, but that you couldn't sell in Paris or Brussels, because this equipment is made all over the world and it's shipped all over the world. And this might be one of the few instances where globalization could have some good, because it just, these are going to be global standards.
Mm-hmm. But in the U.S., there's not much national action, either legislative or volunteer-wise or anything, right?
Well, from a material standpoint, no. Some states have begun to look at materials like mercury. There are a lot of laws about discarding mercury, state laws. Some states have expressed concern about some of the flame retardants, the brominated flame retardants that seem to be migrating out of plastics and causing health problems and drifting all over the world. And there are some state laws, but there is no national legislation at this point that governs materials or computer recycling.
Well, is it because of lobbyists for something? I mean, I don't want my computer to burst into flame. I want it to go fast, so I want it to have the best chips. I want it at a reasonable price. Are there bad guys here, or is it just that we're on a slow learning curve about the harm that's caused by computers?
That's a very good question. I'm not sure that it's as easy as saying there are bad guys. States are very concerned about the solid waste issue, about the e-waste issue, so there are now at least half a dozen states that have passed laws restricting how computers and other electronic equipments can be disposed of. but nothing has yet happened federally. Yes, I'm sure it has to do with lobbying, different interests wanting to do things their way, and a lot of economic pressure on trying to find markets for things. And this country, we're just culturally not attuned to accepting regulation on certain things, like you must dispose of your electronic equipment in a certain way, in the same way people are used to and are ready to accept in Europe, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, this country in general, Portlanders, Oregonians are a little bit better about recycling and so on. I understand that a bill will be introduced or reintroduced in the state legislature next year about something about recycling computers. Can you tell me?
I think so. I don't know the details on that yet. Oregon did have kind of a study group, a committee that looked at this in the last session. And California has passed computer recycling legislation.
Several states have.
And Washington now has, and Washington has some particularly progressive legislation that involves the manufacturers in the whole equation, not just the consumers and the recyclers and the waste companies. So I think there is going to be some effort to leverage the fact that our neighbors to the north and the south now both have electronics recycling laws in place, and I think a bill will be introduced that will probably have elements of both of those.
Okay, and let's say a name of a legislator. I know you know who I'm thinking of.
I think, I'm not sure, but I think one of the lead sponsors will probably be Jackie Dingfelder, who was one of the lead sponsors on the previous legislation.
Okay, representative from Portland.
Yeah, from Northeast Portland.
Okay. Okay, individuals. We can't change the world and change every computer company and mining company right now, but if I have a computer that is obsolete or dead, what can I do with it?
Well, if
what shouldn't I do with it?
What shouldn't you do with it? Don't put it in the trash. Don't put it out on the curb with a sign that just says free. Someone might take it, but you never know. If it's still working and you can donate it to somebody who you know will reuse it, that's great. There's a terrific outfit here in Portland called Free Geek that refurbishes computers, takes old parts, and builds new computers out of working parts. So that's a terrific option.
They also, the ones that can't really be renewed, they disassemble, and they really down to the bare metals and so on, and they sell those and recycle them properly.
Yeah, and there are also a number of computer recycling outfits here in town, and you can also use the manufacturer's recycling program. Most of the big manufacturers have these programs. They're a little hard to find. You can find the instructions on the website, and it will probably cost you money, but paying a little something to recycle, particularly a big CPU and monitor unit, will ensure that it's not just being auctioned off to somebody who's going to make some money by selling the trash overseas.
Yeah, I understand one example is Dell, which sells all their computers by mail. They don't go through stores. And they will give you a return mail label. You can use the same box, basically.
These programs change on a daily basis.
Okay.
I think Dell does that. There may be a charge. Sometimes if you're buying a new piece of equipment, you get some kind of coupon for your next purchase. But, yeah, almost everybody has a program like that.
Okay, so there is room for improvement and the possibility of improvement. My guest has been Elizabeth Grossman, author of High Tech Trash, Digital Devices, Hidden Toxics, and Human Health. The book has just been published by Island Press. And Elizabeth will be appearing, not like a ghost, maybe the ghost of many dead computers. But she's got some appearances in bookstores coming up soon. Tomorrow, actually, in Corvallis, for our Corvallis listeners, at the OSU bookstore at noon. And then back in Portland on the 22nd at Powell's Books at 7:30 p.m. That's the main Powell's on Burnside. And then in Eugene on June 1st on the U of O campus in Lillis Hall, room 182 at 7 p.m. So, Elizabeth Grossman, thank you very much for coming on KBOO.
And thank you.
listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Stay tuned for Stage and Studio.